Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Does the word duh mean anything to you?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 15. 1, 2, 3, 4. Stories. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Atoms.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, listener. Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you what's going on over at our Patreon. There is no Again With This week because October has 5 Fridays and we're going to lump the 4 that we are issuing episodes on together so that the last one drops on Halloween because, you know, spoopy season. But if you kick up your pledge to the $5 a month level or higher, you will get the September edition of Again With Them this Thursday, October 2nd. This is, of course, our monthly recap digest of Jenny and Tori's terrible podcast, 90210MG. We can't tell you what happens this month yet because we are recording this on August 21st. So
something stupid. Next Friday, October 10th, our Again With This bonus episode for club members at all levels will be Let's Watch Katie Holmes' debut episode of How I Met Your Mother. Why are we covering this in spoopy season? Well, it's season 1, episode 6, The Slutty Pumpkin on Netflix.
Yeah.
If you would like to watch along, and that should answer your question. For that and our entire massive archive of extra episodes, we do hope you'll join us againwiththispodcast.com/club.
Yeah, get in the club. We're still pushing for those stickers. We want to make them for you. They're cool. On to this episode, just the one plot, sort of. A/only, the writers of Dawson's Creek somehow anticipate our podcast format and bring us a 4-chapter episode we have no choice but to cover in their order. Jerks. The ski trip kids are trudging to the bus, Jen in her awful frizzy hair, leaning on Jack and being very careful not to fall a third time. He checks that they're okay after the previous night's sexual weirdness, and she says they absolutely are, but then jokes, what if they aren't? What if they had gone through with it, gotten her pregnant, and had a baby? Jack says he would have to tell said child that he could only fool around with their mother while thinking of Ryan Phillippe, and Jen says she probably would be thinking of him too.
Oh, aim higher, both of you.
Yeah. Mr. Kasdan asks if Jen has any other delinquent acts planned. She asks what her punishment is going to be for the tiny liquor bottle incident, but he says she should think of it as the chicken soup her soul really needs. Time stamping this episode with that reference.
Mm-hmm.
Jen looks wary and tries to argue, but Jack yanks her on board before she talks herself into more trouble. And then Drew is staggering toward the bus late and obviously hungover. Mr. Kasdan bitches at him for putting them behind schedule, and Drew's like, totally, can we stop at Starbucks first? Mr. Kasdan blows past that, saying Pacey and Joey aren't on yet. Probably, he speculates, sucking face. Don't say that about your students.
No.
He heads off to look for them, but Drew spots a couple on the bus making out and, with a mischievous look only we see, points them out to Mr. Kasdan. But as soon as Mr. Kasdan is satisfied, we see it's 2 other kids we don't know, and I guess this will probably require an inconvenient journey, but otherwise getting to sleep in until checkout time the morning after the big night? Not so bad.
Yeah.
Thanks, Drew. Cut to the hotel room where articles of clothing are all over the floor. And I'll just say, I am quite certain Joey was not wearing that bra when all of this started, based on what we saw at the end of the previous episode.
No.
Also, based on how much of her hip bones we saw, probably not that underwear either. Pacey and Joey are blissfully asleep and spooning until she rolls over and smiles at him shyly. But when he smiles back, she rolls over looking a lot more conflicted, and he can tell, and it begins.
Please stop, Joey. Just, oh my God. You hope.
You hope.
I forgot that it was going to be like this, but you'd hope that, like, once the, you know, Bubicon had been crossed,
Nice.
The Rubicock. That's nice. Rubicock. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that the attitude would improve somewhat and it wouldn't just be constant defensiveness and fight picking after that because the problem would have been subtracted. But spoiler, that's not how it goes.
Not only is that not how it goes, it gets worse. It ends on a much worse note for multiple characters. But the first chapter of this episode is called About Last Night, like the Demi Moore movie based on the David Mamet play Sexual Perversity in Chicago. Pacey and Joey are buying snacks from the vending machine in the lodge lobby because given that they now have to get their own bus tickets home, this is all they can afford. It is established that Joey told both Betsy and Gretchen why they will be late. Pacey wants to know if Joey told Betsy about what happened last night, and she is appalled that he would think she would. Then he asks if she told Gretchen, and Joey obviously says no, she didn't feel like talking to Gretchen about Joey's deflowering or Gretchen's brother's sexual prowess. If she had, Pacey asks, what would she say about said prowess? Joey calls him a knuckle-dragging primate, but Pacey says even primates get curious about how they are in bed. And then Joey's in the gift shop reading Movie Line's Young Hollywood issue with Kate Winslet on the cover. They have to do this all the time whenever a magazine's mentioned now. Last print edition, 2009, stopped publishing online in 2014. We miss it.
We do.
Pacey tells her to pick a hand. Okay, pick the other hand, which is full of pink foil wrapped chocolates. He knows virginity for candy isn't a fair exchange, but he thought she should get something to mark the occasion. Joey flirts that if she knew there were prizes involved, she would have asked for a car. No, not the Witter Wagoneer. Does she look like a two-bit floozy? Pacey says she's never looked more beautiful, actually. And Joey tenses up a little, but then smiles that he's easy. She didn't even get a chance to shower today. Or brush her teeth, he surmises after she kisses him. She shoots back that he's the morning breath monster, and he purrs that he could do this kind of banter for the rest of his life, with Joey as his partner in irreverence. How does he know he's not the first of many? She asks. If he is, Pacey will be content to be Joey's Neil Armstrong. And then another couple's making out in the lobby when Pacey and Joey sit and exchange a little look. And then we enter the out-of-character Pacey portion of the chapter as he tells Joey it's common, after a couple does what they did last night, to talk about how it went. Joey doesn't know why, but finally relents and soulfully says it was nice. Clip two.
It's nice.
Yes.
This is nice, huh?
What's wrong with nice?
There's nothing wrong with nice. I mean, there's nothing wrong with great either. Hell, there's nothing particularly offensive about mind-blowing or transcendent, but...
Sorry, Pace, I left my thesaurus at home.
Well, that's another first for the weekend, I guess.
Also, Pacey, either have this conversation while you're still naked or don't. You've done this before with someone who hadn't done it before. So you should know that often it's not an O-fest and nice is actually on the better end of what you can hope for. Mm-hmm. Like, don't ask questions you don't want the answers to. She's got that melted wax face on. Just close the box and walk away.
Part of the reason that I'm saying this is out of character for Pacey, like, we never saw anything like this happen after he had sex with Andy. Part of it was because of the whole who fucked mystery. This is not a question he really wants answered. And if he's not happy with the first one, don't pick the scab.
Yeah, you know what an orgasm would look and sound like. Like, even if you never gave her one, which I can't imagine is true because summer boat, etc. I think he did ask Andy if she was okay. And she was like, I'm great. That was great. I mean, you know, I'd have to go back and check. But it's like, this is, I agree. He can be a little bit of a glutton for punishment sometimes. But I don't really feel like this, it would lead to this avenue of inquiry.
Right. Also because, like, all of the age gap consent issues aside regarding Tamara, like, I don't think she was in this for fumblings. Like, I feel like she probably, gave him some direction that he is continuing to use.
Agree.
Pacey, looking back down at his chips, says he's not concerned about her vocabulary. Clip three.
You know, maybe nice means everything to me, Pacey. Maybe nice is all a girl can manage the morning after her first time, because as you know, it's not something I've ever experienced before. So I can't really sit here and honestly say that something is great or mind-blowing or transcendent if I have nothing to compare it to.
Because there are certain benchmarks in the sexual experience.
What do you mean?
You know, there are certain things that happen or don't happen over the course of the evening that...
Are you asking me if I...
Yes!
Can we please not talk about that?
Why?
Because it's not important.
Okay, it might not be important to you, but it's really important to me.
This isn't all about you, you know. You think you're feeling insecure. Do you have any idea what it's like to be me this morning?
No, I don't understand.
Out of character. He's not this obtuse.
He wasn't this obtuse with Andy, I'm almost positive. Like, this is very dumb.
Joey points out that she's following other sexual relationships of his that were both very important to him. As we mentioned last week, could have come up then. So hasn't he thought that she might be concerned about how she was? Pacey claims he didn't even know girls thought like that. Out of character. Some more. Why would he think that?
Because the writers have him thinking that her hesitation all along has not been about her inexperience or insecurity, but about Dawson, which is exhausting. It's just exhausting.
They go on clip 4.
Joe, you were great.
Great?
Yes, great. Which is a hell of a lot better than nice, let me tell you.
Completely beside the point.
But Joe, you were great. You were fantastic. You were every glowing adjective under the sun. I want to run out and tell the entire world what I did last night and who I did it with.
You're not really planning on doing that, are you?
Well, no, but...
Good.
Why is that good?
Because it's private. And I really want to keep it that way. I really don't want the whole world to know about our sex life.
I think I get it. By the whole world, what you really mean is Dawson.
Well, why does it have to be about that? Why can't it just be the fact that I don't want to hurt him any more than I already have?
Okay, we're going to unfortunately find out about this, but you've been dating 9 months. He probably assumes you're going to be having sex soon. If you haven't already, he should, regardless.
Yeah.
But he also now has a sexually experienced partner, so he's probably more focused on having sex with her himself, or he should be, than worrying about what you're doing. But alas... We're going to find out that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Gretchen, fucking speed up the timeline, please.
Show him Lucky, please.
Oh, my God. Show him Lucky today. Do it today. No such luck.
Instead of saying any of what I just said, Pacey says this. Clip 5.
I don't want to hurt him either. Okay? I don't. But I do want to be able to have sex with my girlfriend, whom I adore, without having to worry about the soap operatic repercussions of him finding out. Let me ask you one question, Joe. What would you say to him? You know, if he were here right now and he asked you, what would you tell him?
Well, I would have to tell him the truth.
Why?
Why?
I don't feel comfortable discussing this.
Right.
Talk about a movie.
Right. Or say that's none of your business and let him infer the answer without rubbing his face in it. Like, his whole thing about them, their relationship and the start of it, and he claimed what made him so upset about it was that they were lying. So it's like, don't lie, but don't tell him every single fact. Like, he's not entitled to know some things. Like, she's right when she says it's private. No one needs to know this other than the two of them and her doctor.
Yeah. This is just a way to create conflict within the show, and it's just writer shit. Like, there are ways to do this with these over-analytical teenagers where you don't have to start from a place of Dawson has the right to know everything about everyone else's relationships, including his fucking parents who are expecting another child. Like, this is enough.
Pacey asks if she actually would tell Dawson. Joey glares and then says, yes, absolutely. He sighs. Joey looks away, biting her lip. And then, clip 6.
You want to know something funny? You haven't touched me.
What?
You haven't touched me all morning. Here I was thinking that sex brought people closer together.
Do you want her to ever fuck you again? Because this is not the way. Like, this is so out of character.
Yeah, I really feel at this point when we were recapping it, like we were really was starting to feel like a Kelly and Dylan, like you guys hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this continuing?
I mean, the frustration is like the good moments are good. It's just when they're bad, they're horrible. He is, I mean, a better actor than Jenny Garth and she sells it, but that makes it even more frustrating.
Just exhausting.
Joey storms out. And she's right to do so, since this clearly isn't her boyfriend and she shouldn't waste any more time with whoever he actually is. But the makeout couple watch Joey go and judge Pacey. And Joey's outside crying on a bench when Pacey joins her. He just quietly sits and waits until she tells him why it was important to her that their sex was nice. Clip 7.
there you were above me, and you brushed my hair over my forehead. It felt really nice. Made me feel safe. Like no matter what, you were gonna be there and you were gonna protect me. Years from now, when I look back, I'm really not gonna remember the clumsy positioning or the morning after awkwardness or whether or not the experience itself met the textbook definition of great sex. Remember how sweet you were. How you took me to this brand new place. Ace, I'm glad I had sex. I'm really glad that I had sex with you.
To me, that works, and it's why the end spoiler is so much more infuriating for me.
And why it took an entire act of the show to get there. I mean, granted, it's because Pacey was replaced by a pod person, right. But still.
Yeah, he didn't deserve any of that, but it was nice of her. And even nicer when she says right now she just wants to go home so they can have sex again. Great. Like, yeah. Why waste the 10 minutes that got us here? Like, ugh.
Yeah. Now change the subject to something else you both enjoy talking about.
Please.
Immediately. You've got to stop picking this scab. You've got to.
Next chapter, The Big Picture. A Kevin Bacon comedy about the artistic compromises it takes to break into the film industry, barely related to what we're going to see. Dawson drives Gretchen's truck and parks it in front of Mr. Brooks's house.
Not a euphemism.
No, he's just driving her vehicle and it bugged me. Gretchen pecks Dawson's cheek and promises him it's going to get better. They both get out and head into the garage as requested by Grams at the funeral. Inside, they find her holding a gun, which she explains is a prop from one of Mr. Brooks's pictures and jokes or not, that maybe she can use it to keep Jen in line. Dawson looks around in wonderment as Grams explains that Mr. Brooks collected all this memorabilia from his movie career, which he was very proud of. Grams comments that it was a lovely service. Dawson mumbles that it was quite a turnout, but Gretchen quickly agrees with Grams and asks how they can help. Mr. Brooks told Grams he didn't want this stuff collecting dust, so she thought they might donate it. Dawson does a huge eye roll and full turn, which is our first indication that he is sliding back into shitty Dawson with this episode.
Yeah, didn't take much time at all. Mm-hmm. Also, when would it have had time to collect dust? Like, let's assume that this is a long weekend trip. So,
I just assumed days had passed between chapters because, like, he just died yesterday. They can't have the funeral today.
I mean, they can and have to if he's Jewish, but we were never told that.
True.
I assumed that this was all in the same weekend. I guess they could be sequential, but it really did seem like you got to give the old bats time to come up from Hilton Head or wherever they live now to come to the funeral. Like, if you want a good turnout, maybe wait longer than 48 hours. But maybe I had the timeline wrong. It just seemed like, wasn't that yesterday?
Yeah. And they don't specify. You're right. I just assumed I was giving them the benefit of the doubt that like time was passing between the chapters. But you're right. We don't know that.
Yeah, because otherwise his friends would have gone.
Yes. Well, yes.
And I think they're still on various buses. So that was my assumption.
Could be. Grams asks Dawson more kindly than he deserves after the eye roll and turn if he has any suggestions for what to do with the stuff. Dawson doesn't think there's any point since no one knows Mr. Brooks existed, which he had an entry on the not IMDb. He exists.
Mm-hmm.
Graham suggests that Dawson might want to keep something to remember Mr. Brooks by, but he just stalks out instead. Gretchen starts to go after him, but Graham says she will. And outside tells Dawson this must be hard on him. Like, again, more generous than she needs to be. Like, it's hard on you. You don't have to cosset this kid. He has a girlfriend. He has parents. Be with your own grief. Like, don't play up to him like this. It's what he wants.
Yeah. Although he does apologize for being rude, which I was oh, right. Season 4, Dawson. Phew.
And he's sincere, and I actually believe it. But Grams generously says everyone grieves in their own way. Dawson can't believe she would want to be there today, surrounded by Mr. Brooks's things. It's so morbid. But she says they have lost a dear friend, and that pain will pass at its own pace. She has learned about the importance of closure in the grieving process. Dawson doesn't think that's his problem, but he doesn't know what is. Grams suggests that he spend some time in Mr. Brooks's space with his things and find a way to say goodbye. When Dawson goes back inside, Gretchen shows him what she has found, a play he wrote called Delia and George, dated 1949, meaning Mr. Brooks was Dawson's age when he wrote it. Sasha Alexander and James Vanderbeek then show off, or try to, their range by trying out his rat-a-tat old-timey dialogue, clip 8.
I'm hopping mad at you, George. Come on. It'll be fun.
Whatever for, dear?
Because I find you to be a rather irritating fellow.
Well, is there anything I can do to make it better?
You might go jump in that lake over there.
But that would ruin my suit.
Which would be a fitting punishment.
For loving a skirt like you?
Funny, I thought it was a dame.
No, my dear, you're a skirt. Most definitely a skirt.
All right.
Would you like to talk about the hat?
There is a hat.
We did not agree. We said more hats. He borrows a fedora from the collection in Mr. Brooks's garage. I thought it was good, but maybe because it covers the new hair that I am still struggling with on the beak.
Gretchen kisses Dawson, then says it was in the script. She says Mr. Brooks was sweet. Dawson's mood turns again. Mr. Brooks was sweet once upon a time before he gave up. Dawson's upset that only 5 people showed up for the funeral, the same 5 visitors who were present when Mr. Brooks died. And if Dawson hadn't crashed Mr. Brooks's boat, no one would have been there. And Dawson thinks that's pathetic. And this is what mostly, like you said before, made me think that it could be the same time, because otherwise it's really unforgivable that none of his friends went.
Yeah, agree.
Gretchen points out that Mr. Brooks saw his wildest dreams come true, so he probably didn't want Dawson's pity. Dawson gestures to the collection as he says this stuff is all Mr. Brooks has to show for his dream. When Gretchen says he's starting to sound like Mr. Brooks, Dawson says that's exactly what scares him. At some point, Mr. Brooks decided it was easier to stop caring, and by the time he woke up, it was too late, which could happen to any of them. Gretchen says that can never be Dawson. Yes, he lost the girl, just like Mr. Brooks did, but he put himself back together again and took a chance. It doesn't matter that Mr. Brooks was a coward longer than he was a hero. He figured shit out in the end. She says the moment she realized her feelings for Dawson were more than platonic was when he showed her Mr. Brooks's movie in his room, which, like, if you could even get it, he had more of a legacy than you're giving him credit for. Like, not every movie survives to be released on video. Like, give him a break.
Yeah, jeez.
Seeing Dawson come alive put him in a whole new light for her, so in a weird way, Mr. Brooks brought them together, Gretchen says. Dawson decides to let her cheer him up and tells her how much he likes her. She's smart, funny, knows how to make him feel better, and is beautiful like the women in Brooks's movies, and she smells good. She tells him never to figure out what he's doing, because once he can harness his charm, he'll use it for evil. He starts to ask her something, and she guesses it's to leave him alone for a minute. Before she goes outside, she tells him to remember Mr. Brooks for his great big thumping heart. Dawson goes up to the loft and pulls out a rolled up poster for Turn Away My Sweet with Mr. Lanier, all giant, on the right in the middle with Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Mr. Brooks's estate lawyer, Patrick Felker, comes in. He wanted Dawson to come to his office later to talk about the will and gives Dawson his card. Looking around, Patrick asks if Mr. Brooks was a movie star or something, and Dawson says no, clip 9.
He was a pain in the ass. To be honest with you, he was a grumpy, misanthropic, smarter than thou, pain in the ass. Barely kind word for anybody ever crossed his path. But he was a friend of mine. And I'm going to miss him.
Patrick's like, so cinematographer, or just kidding. He doesn't care what Mr.
Yeah.
Brooks was.
Also, shouldn't
dead.
You know
right.
who your client was?
Didn't have one conversation? All right.
Cool. Thanks, LegalZoom.com.
He says he'll see Dawson later, and when he's gone, Dawson takes the hat he was wearing earlier for the play reading and sets it on a mannequin. Our next chapter is Excess Baggage, after the Alicia Silverstone Guillermo del Toro crime caper, and the intended caperosity comes through immediately when Jen gets her bag caught in a doorway, and we hear this, clip 10.
That's video game music.
Oh my God.
So bad.
That is like absolute, like, clueless, light, ska.
Mm-hmm.
The regular boss tones.
Yeah. The ineffectual and powerless boss tones. The middle manager tones.
I was thinking Summer School just because we just watched it. That would have not been out of place in a movie like that. But anyway.
Kind of. But like Michelle Williams, probably the strongest actor in the core,
mm-hmm.
gets stuck with this like horn blatting slapstick. What? Mm-hmm. Why is that happening?
Standing in the lobby, Jen buzzes, then starts buzzing at regular intervals until the door is opened by Dr. Tom Frost, Rob Nagel. I'm sure Sarah has more to say about him.
He looks 12.
He looks like
his little black turtleneck. Mm-hmm. I mean, were we any of us ever so young? But it really was like, oh, wow. Like, I feel like at the time he seemed older than us and sort of authoritative mm-hmm. and as a therapist and stuff. But like, he's only a few years older than I am. So I'm going to be interviewing him shortly as we're recording this. And I think a lot of the interview is going to be us being like, that literally was half a lifetime ago. Mm-hmm. How's it going? Still got your original hips? Neat. Anyway, it's nice to see him.
So as he ushers Jen in, he apologizes for the mess in what turns out to be a perfectly organized office. Jen jokes that he should really work on that and then can't decide where to sit.
And it's a perfectly organized office. The seating often, Tara notes this in the visual aids, like, is this a test? Because there's kind of a lot of seating. Mm-hmm. Often it is a little bit. Mm-hmm. But there's also a giant light reflector setup. She is standing in front of it later in this scene.
Yeah.
Which is the only reason I noticed it. But it's like it's one thing to have like art or sculpture or whatever that patients can comment on or not.
Mm-hmm.
But that just seemed like some PA just was like, he would have this in his office. Like, would he? It's very odd.
I think it's just an artsy kind of lamp. Like, we had a lamp in New York that looked like a spotlight, too. I think this is just like a choice to make him look avant-garde. Like, I don't think it's a light reflector. Maybe. It's just a very stripped down kind of a lamp.
And yet he has the same Eames chair and ottoman that every therapist's office and Fraser's apartment have.
Yep. Tom guesses that she hasn't been in therapy before, which is true and surprising, she says, given her sordid history, but they shouldn't get ahead of themselves. So she tries the chaise first with Tom behind her in the Eames chair, but then decides that's no good and jumps up. And when she's still pacing, he asks why she thinks she needs to be there. She says she doesn't. She's pretty sure they told him why they wanted her to see Tom. He has heard about disciplinary issues, so she explains about getting caught with the liquor bottles on the ski trip. Clip 11.
So you're drinking?
Yeah. Is that bad?
Depends why you're doing it.
See, here's the thing. I had just been through this really big ordeal with my best friend, Jack. We'd almost slept together, but I had the presence of mind to put the kibosh on it, which is good, because he's a homosexual, which is it's not healthy. Not the homosexual, not him being a homosexual, but sleeping with a homosexual. I keep saying homosexual. I sound like my grandmother. Gay. You could be gay. Are you gay?
Is that important to you?
Just making conversation.
Well, while you're making conversation, could you have a little chat with the script continuity man or woman? Because you got drunk before you guys made out. That's why it happened. You were both wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
Cause and effect are actually important here. So,
also, isn't it kibosh?
I've heard kibosh.
Kibosh. Okay.
I mean, I just don't think it's something someone her age would even say at all. So mispronouncing it sort of fits, but
fair. Tom wants to talk about Jen's drinking and she plays it off. She drinks sometimes. She likes it. Who doesn't? He starts taking notes and she gets even more nervous after asking if she gets a copy. She doesn't.
That's adorable.
She sits to banter with him about how long sessions are and what he does with the 10 minutes at the end of the hour. When he says he rests, she says he doesn't seem to be exerting himself. And when he just looks at her, she asks where he went to school. It's not important, but she's a high school senior. College is on her mind. She sets off his Newton's cradle, the little clacking balls. And then as he gets up to stop it, she wanders over to his diploma from Massachusetts College and offers to straighten it.
The pride of Hamilton Law strikes again.
She knocks it off the wall, breaking the glass and reigniting the wacky score. And you'll see in the visual aids, because I gift it, she certainly has time to put her arms out and catch it. Like, I know she can't, but like, do it again so that it falls in a more realistic way.
Yeah.
She gets flustered. He insists that she leave it. When he's closer, she asks how old he is, and he changes the subject to her parents. She gives him the broad strokes of her conflict with them and how she ended up here, claiming she got through her parents' shittiness and now leans on Grams and her friends. And then she blurts that she doesn't think she's the kind of person who will benefit from therapy since she's pretty self-aware. Tom says teenagers often confuse knowledge with wisdom, leading them down the path of whether he just said she's stupid and her dropping it to prove how little he is affecting her. She catches him looking at the clock and asks if she's boring him. He denies it and seems actually upset that she would think so, which is when she announces this isn't going to work because they are a bad match. Clip 12.
You're not a very warm person.
Is that the kind of relationship you expect from your therapist?
Well, I don't know if you've noticed or not, but what we're trying to do here is based around talking and you're not very easy to talk to.
Well, perhaps that's something we need to work on.
No, perhaps it's something that you should work on.
Perhaps.
Wow, a victory.
Is that important to you? To win?
I knew that was coming.
You didn't answer my question.
Well, because there's just another more irritating one looming on the horizon.
You should go.
It does seem weird that a New York gal raised in the, you know, upper middle class minimum would have a better understanding of how therapy should or often works. It also seems like he should have established some ground rules, which is what happens in the first session, that you kind of get the lay of the land and explain the structure to someone who's never done it or been there before. But she has TV. She's gone to movies. I feel like this is all awfully contrived.
Yeah, it does also seem like her parents would have sent her to therapy as like a first step before sending her away. And that could have been part of this, the awkwardness of this interaction could have been her being like, I tried this before last time at blah, 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 blah. And that's why she's so hostile, other than, you know, just that she doesn't want to be there.
Or they had the family equivalent of, I forget the guy's name, even though I've seen the movie 700 times. You know, that guy who travels with the family on the yacht in Overboard. And he basically is only there to like give the mom Valium and agree with whatever she says and canoodle with Edward Herman's girlfriends. Maybe they sent her to someone like that. And that someone was like, just send her to your mom and on the Cape.
Sure.
I've done everything I could do. If you don't want me to prescribe something for her, then she's got to go to Massachusetts. Like, who knows? This show's idea of what went on in the Lindley family is just a ever-shifting portal of confusion.
It sure is. Jen says she would like to go, but she can't. Tom promises she can. He will tell the school that she fulfilled the requirements. She's surprised, but he's already started typing something on his computer and is no longer looking at her. So when she turns to go and they exchange parting pleasantries, Jen turns back and clip 13.
Am I totally screwed up?
It's probably too early for me to guess.
Take care.
But were I to hazard one, I'd say that the smart, sarcastic exterior masks a scared, lonely young woman whose relationship with her parents has scarred her in ways she hasn't even begun to process. She has a hard time trusting people, men especially. And who can blame her? When parental ties are severed early on like that, it can send a young person searching for love and acceptance in a variety of destructive ways, which may explain your relationship with drugs, alcohol, and a best friend whose sexuality prevents him from ever fully returning your affections. But all that is really just dime store psycho babble. Truth is, we don't really know why you're here yet. But I would love to help you find out.
You got me for the hour. I'm not promising anything. And don't think I didn't catch that whole none too subtle reverse psychology thing you just pulled.
Just kidding. They don't go into it again. He does smile to himself behind Jen, and it seems like she can sense it. I made a gif of this as well, where he sort of covers his mouth so that she can't see. We fade out on her lying back and tell him about her friends, starting with meeting them in the pilot. And then finally, seems like old times, a farce written by Neil Simon. It's about a guy played by Chevy Chase robbing a bank and having to get his public defender ex-wife, Goldie Hawn, speaking of Overboard, to help him despite her being married to the LA County DA now, played by Charles Grodin. So no part of the movie relates to what we're about to watch, really, except the title. The shot goes from black and white to color as we see his girl Friday is playing downtown. Joey runs into Dawson in line. She expresses condolences for everything, which she could have done at the funeral if she had gone.
Wasn't home, I have to assume.
I sure hope so. Dawson asks how the trip was and if she and Pacey had fun, and she obviously doesn't volunteer what kind of fun they had, because that would be weird, but I think we're supposed to think she was wrong not to. Anyway, she suggests that instead of the movie, they could go somewhere and talk, and Dawson gives her his best smile as he agrees. And at the diner Capeside suddenly has that we've literally never seen before.
Nope.
Dawson tells Joey this isn't a secret, but he hasn't told anyone else yet. Mr. Brooks named him in his will with instructions to spend the money on something great. It's enough for him to pay his whole college tuition or to make a movie, as she suggests. Suddenly, Dawson says Joey seems different. She even looks different, he says, which, it give me a fucking break. Like, you can't tell by the way she's holding a mug. Shut up.
No, but if that was just a guess to try to get a bite, the absolutely interminable pauses she's taking and the lip biting she's doing should tell you that you're onto something.
Yeah.
Joey.
So stop asking. That's your answer.
Yeah.
But anyway, she suddenly says they should get out of there, and he looks quizzical but follows, I guess, to somewhere dark she's taking him so that he can't closely observe the changes in her since her de-virginization. And on the swing sets, Joey explicitly apologizes for not having been around while Dawson was going through his ordeal with Mr. Brooks, the way he has been around for her in bereavement. Inviting follow-up questions, she says she has made some big changes and big decisions lately and wondered if she's going to wake up one day and realize friendship was the most important thing. So if she was bad at that, where does it leave her? But Dawson doesn't ask, at this point, what changes and choices she's referring to, and sincerely tells her she's not a bad friend. She's his best friend, in fact. She smiles, but notably doesn't say it back. And he goes on, clip 14.
No matter where you are, no matter where your life might take you, and no matter who you're with,
you'll always have a piece of my heart.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't that have to be a huge piece?
No, not a huge piece. Just enough.
Tiny piece.
Sure.
Just be normal.
This could have been the end. You guys could have stopped here. It would have been fine. We would have all been happier.
Except they needed to do this next little mini montage during which he's walking beside her and doing that thing where he flips a leg up to the side and kicks her in the butt, which is literally the most I've ever liked him.
It's very cute.
So adorable.
Before they get there, though, she does Liv Tyler tongue again, where she like sticks it out between her teeth for a million years. And whoever told her this affectation was cute is my enemy. I pray she doesn't still do it. Katie Holmes. Anyway.
Yeah, you got to stop.
So, yes, we did get the montage Sarah's referring to. They goof on the boardwalk with butt kicks. They play with puppies, which is a bit much. And then end up back at the theater and vaguely say they should do it again. But before they end their evening together, they each have one more thing to say to the other. And unfortunately, Joey tells Dawson to go first, permitting him to make it weird. Clip 15.
Did something happen on the ski trip?
What do you mean?
Well, I have this feeling, this kind of unshakable feeling that something happened. And it's just a feeling, and you don't have to answer me if you don't want to, but...
What are you asking me?
I'm asking you if you slept with Pacey.
It's kind of personal, don't you think?
I think it's really personal.
I mean, What if I was to stand here and ask you if you've slept with Gretchen?
The answer would be no. But you're right, it's very personal, it's none of my business, and I apologize. I'm sorry.
That's the
Wait,
end!
Both of you go home!
Go home!
You can still save this!
Stop! It's not his business. He took it back. Don't answer. Also, Joey looking so guilty, she's kind of giving him his answer anyway, like he doesn't have more to ask.
No, this has been true at like four different junctures in their evening together. Like, whatever you suspect, go write it down in your gurnal.
Yep.
And fucking, oh my God, like, Jesus. I sometimes hate this show so much for doing this to these people and us.
Yeah. However, Joey doesn't leave, so Dawson keeps talking. Clip 16.
I guess I want you to know that I'm not holding in anything that we might have said in the past, okay? I mean, I want you to live your life and be happy and enjoy everything that goes along with that. And I know that sometimes you make a promise and you mean it at the time, but then life gets in the way and it makes it impossible to keep.
Hello? Come in.
Hi, I'm an inspector.
Sir, you are not welcome here. Back to the actual episode. What did they promise? Like, did they promise to be each other's first? They've dated for 3 months when they were in the 10th friggin' grade. Like, if he's been waiting for her to be his first, live in the now. You have a girlfriend who fucks. Fuck her and leave Joey alone.
My God.
Thank you.
If this is something that happened before we met them, like, why were you having this conversation before feelings between you were even known?
Yes.
I could see it being something like, oh, well, if we're both not married when we turn 35 or whatever, we'll just marry each other when they're like 9.
Uh-huh.
But like, any version of this conversation already occurred is even more grody.
Yes. Ugh. Yes, it is. Akko Taco. They continue.
That's diary feelings.
I'm so mad that people who listen to this don't realize that wasn't me saying that. I was quoting fucking Jenny Garth on, or Amy, or one of them on OMG. That's not me coming up with that horrible expression. Pick up their pledge to $5 in your mall. Anyway, they continue. Clip 17.
A couple years ago, if someone were to tell me that we'd be standing here having this conversation, I would have referred him to the nearest asylum. But things aren't exactly turning out the way that I necessarily thought they would. A couple of years ago, if you would have asked me who the first person I was going to have sex with was, I would have answered unequivocally. Dawson Leary, that's who.
Ugh.
The possibility of sleeping with anybody else never even occurred to me. Especially not Pacey.
So what are you saying, Joe?
Spit it out.
No. I've not slept with Pacey.
That was like a 30-second pause. Like,
oh my God. Dude. It's such an obvious fucking lie.
Yes, it is.
Which you could see coming when she's like, the first person I would sleep with, like, okay, the tenses aren't perfect, but you could have told, you could have figured out by that point.
Yep.
She's already done it.
Yep.
And it wasn't with you.
Right.
Like, there were so many ways to get out of this before it got more horrible and not one single one was even looked at.
She had so many outs. He gave her multiple outs. Why didn't you take them? Like, best friendship does not entitle him to ask or know this. This is not, you can volunteer it. He doesn't have the right to inquire.
Yeah. You don't see me asking Tara if she slept with Pacey over last weekend because it's none of my business. Nothing from the Hyman Inspector. All right.
I want to be your pony adventure.
I was trying to be silent for as long as Joey was before saying, no, I have not slept with Pacey. Anyway.
They're throbbing biological urges.
Oh, my God.
Dawson can't hide how surprised he is. Clip 18.
Oh. I'm sorry. That was a sigh of relief you just heard.
What?
Yeah, we know.
What are you relieved about? They've been dating 3 times longer than you did 2 years ago. And this is the time for you to say, well, just so you know, if and when you do decide to do it, don't feel like you need to think about me. Like, he basically did say that earlier, but like, being this relieved kind of, you know, contradicts his claim of like, I won't hold you to anything. Like, clearly now he's gonna, because she lied. Yeah. This is what the fight is gonna be about.
Like, the fact that you brought it up at all means that nothing you say afterwards, no matter how she responds, mm-hmm. is going to convince her that it's not on your mind. Yeah. So I am begging these people to find a television program in-universe to all watch and talk about. Mm-hmm. Please.
Yeah. Or go to Tom and learn about boundaries, because some of you have none. You have none and you don't know how to set them either.
No, you don't.
I'll give them this. At least Dawson wasn't then like, what were you going to say? So that she could say nothing. But that's only because we've traveled back in time to revisit shitty preseason 4 Dawson for some reason. And he's too self-involved to remember she was even going to say anything. And the shot changes back to black and white again as we watch Dawson wander off, wrongly believing himself not to be the only virgin in his friend group. But he is. And that's the end. Let's close it up with the MVP.
Not a lot to choose from. I would say Tom Frost, but I really feel like, speaking of boundaries, like there were things that you as a therapist were supposed to establish that you didn't. Mm-hmm. And that whole, all right, bye, play probably isn't authorized by the licensing board. Mm. I know it worked out, but anyway, I'm going to say Grams because gave Dawson a chance to be in his grief, but also like graded him on a little bit of a curve. And he responded to that and apologized to her for being a shitwit. So it's seldom a wrong call to go with Grams.
I agree. But since you said her, I'll say Gretchen just to mix it up, because she was actually very helpful too and reframed his suddenly pouty thinking about Mr. Brooks in a way that he needed to hear and did a good job. Yeah. Least valuable player. The writer of this episode is my enemy forever for bringing us back to a place I never, ever wanted to return to. I'm going to look him up because I think it's Jeffrey Stepakov, but nope.
Oh, who wrote this?
Tom Kapanos, who had a character named after him, the other guidance counselor that was only in one episode.
Yeah. Look, T-Caps, that's not going to work. I know it's not really fair because she can only be who she's written, but Joey, like, you absolutely have to stop wax from melting in response to every single thing that happens to you that is good.
Yes.
Please stop. Next time and again with this, it doesn't. Only on TV shows do senior polls and most likely twos hold this much sway over entire weeks of kids' lives. I was voted either most likely to marry David Letterman and become a serial killer, or most likely to marry a serial killer and become David Letterman. I don't remember which. They were both accurate. Fucking get over it. Oh my God. But this is a TV show, so I guess we're doing this fucking shit again, but I'd still rather watch that than Jen inappropriately tailing Tom Frost to a poetry reading, or Gretchen going full sour girl about Joey lying to Dawson about her hymen. You should take the full dose of Tums before you inspect our visual aids. We do them for each and every episode, and they're positively lousy with 90s and aughts fashion. You can find them, along with the episodes themselves, on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. I'm most definitely a skirt, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is reverse psychology thing, Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, left his thesaurus at home. Talk to you next time.
Dawson sucks. Cheers.
Come on, crack those atoms. You, tear out those pockets. Atoms. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 of them. Take him away.